It is Locked On Jazz for the 28th of August. Game 6 will happen at some point. We'll break it down and look at what you need to see and keep an eye out for as the Jazz try to close out the Nuggets at some point in time. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, lots of those today, and hopefully making it way better to be a Jazz fan each and every day. Hope you're doing great. Thank you very much for all the comments, some positive, most positive, some negative, on yesterday's show. For those of you that kind of understand and have relayed to me understanding kind of how vulnerable I have been in this and been willing to and respecting that, I super appreciate it because it is not comfortable. And so I do thank you very much for those who made that comment to me. A lot of you on Twitter, I tried to get back to each and every one of you. Some on email, I tried to get back to you as well. So thank you very much. All right, today's show is brought to you by our friends over at Built Bar. Today's episode, BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON and get $10 off your next order on the new Built Bars. All right, so where are we? And what's going on? We don't have a schedule as of now. I suspect that we'll get announced the games start on Saturday and that we will move towards Sunday as the time that the Jazz play. I would guess that we just pick up the schedule where it was. But I honestly don't know. We have not seen a schedule yet. I also think that the mental health issue inside the bubble is real. I think Paul George's revelation the other day was important. It got overshadowed a tiny bit, but as I brought up at the end of the Ben Golliver episode, which if you haven't heard already on Locked On NBA was quite good, I think was relevant and is probably got to be talked about a little bit. And in that sense, and what I mean by talked about a little bit is you may not want to, you frankly may, you know, you don't want to stretch it out too much further. You got to get these guys playing and going again. And for those that aren't going to, you know, we don't want to extend their stay on that. I do have one, you know, quick social justice thought here. First is, it's interesting how a lot of people are kind of hit, you know, why do the NBA player, you know, the complaint, why do the NBA players have to do this? Like, I just, right, okay. Actually, I think it's a great question. Why do the NBA players have to do this? Like, not like, why do the NBA players have to, but why the NBA players? Like, why aren't our federal legislators doing something about this? Why aren't our state legislators doing something about these conversations that are not, maybe, you know, in Minneapolis, they got called to action after George Floyd, but like, yeah, why are NBA players? Like, where did we get to a point where the seems to be a universal common thread to what a Black American will tell you their experience is, and yet, like, this is why voting is so important, but also just human decency. So, like, to me, when someone says to me, you know, or relays to me, like, why the NBA players? Like, exactly. Why aren't our leaders and our doing what's best for our common, our fellow citizens of our country? Absolutely. Why? Why does it leave George Hill in a locker room in Orlando to lead a movement inside of his team to get the country to stop and talk about this for a day? Whereas, frankly, had the NBA players not talked about it, I actually don't think society would have stopped to talk about it as much. It would just been almost was going to the realm of the school shooting. Like, oh, okay, again. Like, so, yeah. Why the NBA players? Exactly. Or maybe if the NBA players are the one talking about it, then that tells us something about how little anybody else is. Just a thought on that. One of the questions that's being asked to me, whose advantage? I got it. Like, we're sports fans. We want to win, so that's what we want to know. It feels kind of tone deaf, but let's address it. So I don't really think anyone's advantage, because both teams have been through it. I do think that Denver, I don't know, is it harder to beat someone 3 times in 5 days or 3 times in 9 days? I have no idea. I do think Denver had some real momentum. They changed the way we played game four. They should have won game four. They won game five. So I think that hurts them. If they get Gary Harris back and he's impactful, that helps them. They ran their guys an incredible amount of minutes the other day without ever checking out. But frankly, we then matched it with Rudy. So the extra break is probably fine for us on both levels. I think that actually works. I think both though. I don't think it'll change the outcome of the series unless Gary Harris comes back and is amazing. So that's the only thought I have on that. All right, I got a bunch of X's and O's things we'll look at both offensively and defense before we wrap up the show. I do. I'm kind of all over the map. I think I'm just very torn on how to navigate these shows right now and what are the topics of conversation. We have a wonderful dialogue going on, which is, I think, actually because a lot of you are interacting with me, and I super appreciate it, on Twitter or at dlock09@gmail.com. And so we have a great dialogue going on. There were two questions that were asked a good deal yesterday. There's one question and one pretty heavy implication. So one of them was like, well, what can the owners do? And I felt as though I heard that question. Again, this is me entirely. And saying, well, what could they possibly do? They can do a ton. Right? I mean, if you start looking at how much money all these ownership groups use in their various lobby groups in Washington, D.C. toward lobbying on the behalf of their businesses, they could take that same energy toward social issues. So that the implication I hear in that question of like, well, what do they want the owners to do? Like, the power structure in our society, in capitalism, is to the people who have the wealth at the top. And our owners in the NBA are the most powerful people in the country. So there's a lot they could do, right? I mean, a lot. If whatever restaurant industry you want to look at, I mean, the Bucks ownership is venture capital. And I'm sure that they're, they've not only just with their money and with programs, but with pressure, could they start to institute. And then also just hiring practices, right? Like, what efforts are being made to try to diversify all of these companies other than their basketball team? Like, I think that's a large part. The second one is this kind of implication of, well, if the blacks help themselves, then that would be better off. I'm not going to get into the whole sociological aspect of this, but the data on that actually isn't great. That there's not a lot of data that's going to show that you win on that one. That argument doesn't hold it. Like the Black American college education level is only 12% lower than the white, I think, last time I checked. That's pretty amazing considering the hurdles that have to be jumped differently, right? There's a vast percentage of the white population that's just going to college by existing. So I think the graduate degree number, so now once someone's gotten to college, the playing field's becoming slightly more equal. There's still all sorts of aspects in that's not equal, but the graduate degree number, I think, and this is obviously then if you have financial resources to this, you have a much better chance of getting graduate degree, but there's more scholarships at this point, is like 13% to 8% of population. It's getting pretty close. So I would say that that argument is not holding. the data and sociological data on some of that argument is not as great as it want, as it might be. Just, I don't want to get overwhelmed. All right. I just had to get those two things off. That's a lot of what's coming in. Thank you guys for kind of the intermixing of these two. Because that's where we are, frankly. That's where we are. All right. We're going to dig into the X's and O's of basketball and all of that next. Murdoch Hyundai is the sponsor of today's show at 4646 South State Street. Also located in Logan and in Linden. They've got the great setup. I'm driving. We actually have like a million Santa Fes now. I'm driving the Santa Fe again. Because the Sonata that I love so much, they didn't have any of the Limited left in stock because they're flying out the because they're that good. I'm telling you, I loved it. It was just a great, great car to drive, that sedan. The SUV lineup is super. The Konas are flying off the lots right now. They got a great deal of incentives. I actually asked Blake when I saw him the other day, like, what's the fastest selling car? He said, well, right now it's the Kona because of the incentives on it, but usually it's the Tucson, which is the next level, then the Sonata, then the Santa Fe. Check them all out. They're a great lineup of cars. Total sweet spot. Hyundai's nailed in the marketplace of how to give you the most bells and whistles, all the most luxuries and all those kind of things. And then, at the same time, give it to you at a reasonable price. Murdoch Hyundai, located 4646 South State Street, also located in Logan and in Linden. If you're going to head over to either one of those two locations, please give me an email or either of those three at dlock09@gmail.com. dlock09@gmail.com. Let me set up a meeting for you. Today's show is also brought to you by Built Bar. Unbelievably healthy, ridiculously delicious. It's the perfect protein energy bar, workout bar you can have with great macros. The mint brownie, 130 calories, 17 grams of protein, and only 4 grams of sugar. How great is that? The salted caramel, same thing. 130, 17, and 4. And they have a nice thing where they have their nut factory and their non-nut factory, so that's super. I like that because I'm allergic to nuts. You can also build your own box. You can have the mixed options, and you can get $10 off your next Built Bar order by simply using the promo code LOCKEDON. If you've already used that promo code, you can actually use it again because this is a whole relaunch of what Built Bar is doing. So go to BuiltBar.com and great customer service experience and check out the unbelievably healthy, ridiculously delicious Built Bars. All right, to basketball. Let's start with the Jazz offense. So Denver's done some interesting things in this series. They were all over the map early and frankly probably didn't have a great plan, and the Jazz at least made it look like that. And the Jazz exploited them pretty dramatically. And one of the signs was how many threes the Jazz were getting and how many passes they were throwing and how many corner threes they were getting. So in game one of the series, the Jazz threw like 325 passes, somewhere in that range. Game two of the series, I think they threw 300. Game three of the series, they were back up to 322. Then all of a sudden in game four, they threw 236 passes. So they fell off by nearly 90 passes. One per possession, basically, in the game. They moved it back up to 283 in game five. And actually, all of the numbers do this. And what I think we're going to see here, what Denver did defensively, is Denver did a few things in games one, two, and three. None of them worked. They then went radically the other way in game four, and it actually didn't work again. Even though it completely altered the way the Jazz were playing, it didn't work. And then they brought it back in between in game five, and I'm pretty certain from their standpoint, they probably think they just hit the sweet spot. The Jazz took 48% of their shots as threes in game one, 50% of their shots as threes in game two, 44% of their shots as game three. Game four, they slipped to 39 and then went back up to 44 in game three. Okay? Or game five. Corner threes, which to me is always a sign the ball's moving, we're getting the open spot, we've broken the defense, nobody wants to give up corner threes. 13 game one, 14 game two, 12 game three, just four in game four and went back to eight, right in between, right? Now, one thing that Denver's doing that everyone does in the playoffs, it's why the off-the-bounce three is so important, is they're forcing who they want to have take the catch-and-shoot threes. The one exception is that Mike Conley keeps getting free, particularly for that corner three, and he's doing exactly what you think he would do, which he's not missing. He's been great. So that would be the one area where I'll be interested to see if the Jazz, anytime Mike Conley is getting a catch and shoot three, I would say is a sign that the Jazz completely just busted Denver's defense. Now, the other aspect of this is why the off the bounce threes become so important, because teams can't really deny you. If Dame Lillard wants to get an off the bounce three, or Donovan Mitchell wants to get an off the bounce three, they can't really deny it. So Donovan's taken 35. He's 18 of 35. Incredible. 52%, 51%. Clarkson's taken 17. He's 9 of 17, 53%. Incredible. Scary numbers. I don't think they can last. Conley, 7 of 13, 54%. Joe's 4 of 11, 36%. Okay, those are the guys who want to have shoot him. Catch and shoot. Denver's getting what they want. Niang's taken 21. He's hit 8. Clarkson's taken 21. He's hit 6. Ingles has taken 16. We would want that, but Joe's only been all recently. He's one of his last 6. He's 7 of 16 overall. O'Neal's taken 13 when he takes him. He's 6 of 13. He's good. Then Conley's taken 9. Mitchell's taken 7. Morgan took 8 in his limited time. That's what they wanted. So they're getting, their defensive scheme is getting us to take the off the bounce, the catch and shoot threes that they want us to take. Right? They're all right. We have great shooters. So they're banking that George Niang and Jordan Clarkson and Royce O'Neal are not going to come through. That's what they're banking on. So when you look at us, and we'll look at them in a second on this, when you look at us staying with us just offensively. So the first thing they've done is they've stopped some of our passing, hugging some of our shooters, choosing which ones we're going to get. The second thing they've done is that they've stopped getting caught in isolation. We torched them in isolation. In game four, which we won, we had 35 points in isolation. In game five, which we lost, we had 6. 35-6. And we had less isolation chances, too. We had 22 isolation chances in game four and only 15 in game five. What are they doing? We were just going and zeroing in on Michael Porter Jr. They have guys that are just not defending. So when Michael Porter Jr. is defending the ball handler, we're shooting 33 of 52, and we've scored 86 points. When Monte Morris is defending, they've actually been okay, but he's small, and in the right matchups, we've got him. But Jamal Murray, not. We're 23 of 43 shooting when Jamal Murray's guarding and has 70 points. Paul Millsap has been all right. Grant's all right. Jokic, we've torched. 53 of 83 shooting, partially because of Rudy. 126 points. So we've got guys that we can go get in isolation. And what Denver's changed is that when we go get that guy and pull him up to a pick, they're not leaving him just stranded out on an island anymore. They were doing that earlier. They were just leaving that guy stranded out on the island. And we were going to work, and we scored 35 points on isolations in game four and 6 in game five. So they're not allowing that to happen anymore. One of the lineups we were killing people was Mike Conley was beating up Monte Morris, so they put PJ Dozier in for the rest of the game. Dozier's interesting. I mean, he was a McDonald's All-American, big-time recruit, Michigan, North Carolina, South Carolina, Louisville. Big-time recruit, went to South Carolina, helped them get to the Final Four, and then just didn't have an offensive game. Great metrics, long reach, credible reach. I think 8'5 standing reach, 6'11 wingspan, 6'7. I mean, huge when guarding Mike Conley, and that's really important. So they went to him instead of Monte Morris. It brings Jamal Murray back to the sole ball handler. But from a defensive standpoint, Conley had kind of buried them, and then that took Mike out of the game. I think that's one that the Jazz will be ready for, and they probably just didn't expect that. The other one that they've changed is that we were torching them on the pick and roll drop because that's getting that one-on-one on Jokic coming downhill. So they brought Jokic up to the screen on Donovan Mitchell, almost trapping. He's still backpedaling on Conley. We'll see if they adjust that. But they got out of that softer drop coverage as much as they possibly could. Donovan and Rudy's pick and roll is still fabulous. And they were 1.3 points per on 25 pick and rolls in game five. That has not gone away. One area that's a little concerning for me from our standpoint, and I'm sure Denver's aware of, is that Jamal Murray's not very good defensively, and they are trying to rest him. He's guarding Joe Ingles a lot, and Joe is not beating him. Now, Joe's not a one-on-one guy. Joe's one of seven shooting when guarded by Murray, and he's one of six from three. But I do think at some point, if Jamal Murray is guarding Joe Ingles, we've probably got to get Joe Ingles running the pick and roll more, spacing Donovan and Conley just to make Jamal Murray defend, because he's not a good defensive player. So that's where we are offensively. We'll check in on where we are defensively and what we need to do in that regard. Today's show is brought to you in part by the real estate company out of Utah County that is revolutionizing real estate, and that is Homie. You've seen the teal billboards all around. Why is Homie so popular? Well, really, quite frankly, is they're saving you a lot of money. Customers rave about their service, but what they really love is the $5,000 back help on closing costs and fees. Homie will refund $5,000 back to you so you can buy more home with your money. That's right. And they do a set fee on the other side of the transaction. Homie actually took a bunch of time and did an entire real estate study that you can go check out at homie.com/millennials to give people more information. Homie has saved customers over $50 million in total by not using traditional realtors. And Homie saves sellers on average $10,000. 73% of Homie's agents were part of the top 500 agents this year as well. So why don't you go ahead right now and text LOCK, L-O-C-K-E, to 88588. That's LOCK to 88588. An experienced local Homie agent will help you every step of the way. Remember, you can buy with Homie and save thousands because Homie's got your back. All right, from the defensive standpoint, the first three games of the series, the Jazz defense when Rudy Gobert was on the floor with Jokic was just fabulous. That is not true anymore. What's interesting about that is that now that the Nuggets have made some adjustments to what they're doing offensively and what we are doing defensively, is one of the things that the biggest change they've made is they've gone away from the Jokic-Murray pick and roll because it involved Rudy. So they are actually, when we all talk about, like, you know, you hear people saying playing Rudy off the floor and doing all those kind of things, the Jazz are still plus 7.7 per 100 possessions when Rudy and Jokic are on the floor, but our defensive rating is now at 123.8. And over the last two games is at a 133 when Rudy's on the floor with Jokic. That's a disconcerting trend. Okay? That's a disconcerting trend. Because it was at about a 104 in the first three games. Interestingly enough, I went to go look up, said, well, wow, they must be killing us on the Jokic-Murray pick and roll. Exact opposite is true. So what Denver's done, I think, has gone away from the Jokic-Murray pick and roll because Rudy was having too big an impact. By having Monte Morris start and swinging the ball more and using the ball, they're actually getting away from it. They ran it 29 times in game four. They only ran it 17 times in game five. So suddenly, and if you actually go look at Murray's second half that was so amazing, he hits on 14 of his first 17 shots. The only three he misses are a left side pick and roll with Jokic. Gobert switches on him. He goes on a search dribble. He misses a baseline fader. He starts on the high right. He goes pick and roll left to right with Jokic. Gobert switches to him for another baseline fader and misses. He starts left side. He comes off a pin down instead into a pick and roll with Jokic, leaning in the lane with Gobert now switched onto him, and he misses. Those are Murray's only three misses of the second half of relevance. He missed his last shot. The game was over. Instead, as we talked about, I think on a previous Lockdown Jazz, what they did is they started going, they targeted Ingles. They went one-on-one. They targeted Niang. They targeted Clarkson. And then they, a bunch of mistakes. Off an inbound, O'Neal complained to the official. Off a double team, O'Neal didn't stay with him. He brought Ingles and O'Neal on a pick and roll and he split it. Two back-to-back bizarre scramble plays that swung the game. And you have, then you went one-on-one on Donovan, one-on-one O'Neal. So Denver has reduced the impact of Rudy Gobert defensively by actually just not involving him. Now, they're still involving him on the Murray-Jokic pick and roll for when Jokic pops out for a three. And I'm not sure I think that that's the most replicable model out there. Jokic had a career-high 7 threes the other day. Like, he does that 2 more times, we probably lose the series. Right? Like, I know, like, oh my gosh, you can't say that. Well, no, I mean, really, like, if Jokic decides to go 7 of 11 from 3 and take his, you know, 11 of his 19 shots as 3-point shots, unless we're going to take Rudy completely off him and switch him, I mean, a lot of ways I feel like that's a sign to me that the Jazz have actually, you know, that Rudy's having his impact. And that's where they're great. Like, give Jokic credit if he can actually do that. But, like, Jokic took 2 shots. Of Jokic's 19 shots, he took 2 at the rim the entire game. 2. And I bet you if I dug into what those 2 are, we might find out that they were, you know, offensive rebound putbacks or something of that nature. I haven't looked at it. He went 2 for 3 inside 5 feet and 1 for 2 inside the restricted area. So, you know, give the Jazz, you know, Rudy's doing his job, but what they've done is taking that away. Driving hook shot from 4 feet he hit in the second quarter with 1:35 left. And he had a 2-footer on a turnaround bank hook shot with 8:26 left in the beginning of the game. And he had a 7-footer driving floater. One of those missed. So, you know, they've taken Jokic out. They're letting Murray, and then this is what gets tough, is now Murray just gets to go play on our guys. Our guys have got to step up and defend. Our defense is largely predicated on Rudy stepping up and making plays. It's time for guys to guard their yard. When O'Neal's guarding someone so far in this series, they're shooting 35 of 66 for 91 points. When Ingles is guarding someone, they're shooting 23 of 42 for 58 points. When Niang's guarding someone, they're shooting 17 of 34, 50% for 55%. Clarkson, 18 of 35. So all of our guys are like right at 50%. Donovan's actually pretty good. 17 of 46. Donovan's actually been the best. He hasn't had to guard the best guys. But our guys are going to have to guard their yard. Because Denver has changed what they're doing. Offensively. And are now hunting our guys instead of playing the 2-man game with Jokic. And at some point, you'd think Denver's got to cool off. But maybe not. Off the bounce threes. Jamal Murray, 14 of 27. Incredible, 52%. Michael Porter Jr., 4 of 7. I'll bet you all of them are 1 dribble left. Morris, 1 of 5. Jokic, 3 of 4. They don't have a big pull-up game. Their catch-and-shoot game, we have not been able to do to them what they've done to us. Which is... they've forced, hey, all of our guys are good shooters, but they've forced who they want to have take the shots. We have not done that. Jokic has taken 31. He's 13 of 31. Grant's taken 23. We're probably fine with that. He's shooting 35%, right, as he did for the season, 8 of 23. Michael Porter Jr.'s taken 21, which is too many. He's hitting 48%. Murray's taken 15. He's hitting 53%. Torrey Craig is 6 of 14 for 43%, which is not... likely. Millsap, 4 of 12. Monte Morris, 3 of 11. PJ Dozier, 1 of 5. PJ Dozier plays, and I think we'll see the Jazz guard him differently, knowing that. Grant's 39% on the regular season. Jokic is only 33% on the regular season. Murray's 39, Craig's 32. Morris is down as 40%. So some of those numbers could come back up. All right, hopefully we'll get basketball this weekend and you can enjoy it. Hope all is well. Thank you for your correspondence and your time. Locked On Fantasy Basketball, Josh Lloyd is back and rolling. If you didn't hear Ben Golliver yesterday, that's a pretty good one. Bobby Jackson was on with Locked On Kings, some very insightful comments. Why don't you do that? Why don't you tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of podcast, Locked On Kings? Have a good one.